knows about it, and hopefully, and I think Representative Anderson has ways and means, and so there are some meetings and things, you know, this time of year. We need to meet, and we all have, I think, wanted, you know, just holding on and wanting to get started here on this important work. So, and continue this work. So I feel I don't want to be that formal about this, but I guess I'm forced to do that sometimes. So on our agenda here, there is introduction of the task force members, and what we could do is just go around the room and just say who we are. I did just meet with all of you, so I do know you, but you may not know one another. So we could do that. And then we can come back and go through our agenda and our packet, some information. So I'm Representative Patty Fritz, and I'll turn to my right.
Hello, I'm Trish Olson with the University of Minnesota Extension.
I'm Ann O'Connor, the designee on the task force by Commissioner Rothman.
Good morning, I'm Tracy Fishman, Executive Director for Accountability Minnesota.
Good morning, I'm Pam Johnson with the Minnesota Community Action Partnership.
I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. We help staff this task force.
Good morning. Bob Johnson representing Northern Connections.
Hello, I'm Dan Duhamel with the Department of Human Services Office of Economic Opportunity.
Good morning. I'm Shauna Thompson with the Emerge Community Development in North Minneapolis.
Hi, I'm Megan Woolley with Emerge Community Development also.
I'm Sandy Nairn with Messerlin and Kramer. I'm here on behalf of the U.S. Bank and the Society of CPAs.
I'm Teresa Kovas with the Minnesota Bankers Association.
Ryan Smith with the Minnesota Credit Union Network.
Nate Mazzell with Lockhart Green Loan on behalf of the Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Company.
I'm Sally Olson with the Legislative Coordinating Commission.
Taking all the minutes for us and keeping all the information in check. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. You're just in time to introduce yourself.
Okay.
Everything's in
here. Oh, I don't have to. Okay, thank you. Is it okay if I sit on this side?
Yes.
Sit
wherever you are comfortable.
Well, good morning. My name is Eric Pratt. I represent Senate District 55, which is Scott County. I have the cities of Shakopee, Prior Lake, Jordan, and six townships. Professionally, I'm with U.S. Bank as Senior Vice President of Credit Administration. Sorry, we had a late night last night. And it's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome. We're happy that you're here. I don't think we've met. I'm Representative Patty Fritz. So
nice to meet you.
I've been on the task force for quite some time. And I'm glad everybody's here. So in our, here's what the agenda has us going next to election of chairs. And, of course, we won't have a quorum for that. We may have to put that off. We'll have to put that off, actually, until we do have a quorum. We can do that at that time. So I am, of course, going to be very informal and ask for all of you to chime in and trying to get through the agenda. The purpose of the task force and the review of the legislative charges and all that information that is in your packet. And we have, you know, changed our name to the Asset Development and Financial Literacy Task Force. And I am certain that all of you now know that, and I do sometimes hear us referred to as LADDER, but then I click on to the correct name of our task force, and I'm very comfortable with that, and I hope that everyone else is as well. And here comes Representative Ford. So the task force, since I've been with it, actually reviewed and legislation and had legislation before us that we were able, you know, the important part of it was that we were able to keep the task force. So we do have, I think, is it 2 years left? So I do feel an urgency that isn't a long time, but at least we do have that. So, but that will be one of our charges to extend that task force. So if you want to keep that in mind, I think the work that we've done has been extremely important, and we continue to do good work in this area. In the meetings that I've been in before and heard from many of you and the work that you do, it's outstanding. And so my thought is this, that I would like some of that information brought forward today, where who your organization is, and a little bit of, you know, a thumbnail sketch of what you do, so that we all get it, because it is overwhelming and it is a lot. And we do have new members who don't know. And I think that's the best way to sell this task force, is to let people know how much is being done already. So we have a responsibility, I think, to continue that work, that good work. And that's sort of where I thought, for the new folks, that that would help them, to bring them up to speed before we get into thinking and crafting and moving legislation, because we won't be doing that this year. We actually did have a win in that we did get some money for our program that hopefully will continue some good work. So with that, I'd like to, if it's all right with the folks up here with me alongside of me, open it up and could start with whoever wants to go first. And I know that Mr. Johnson, you probably could really start this with your organization, and you can stay there or you can come up to the table. Would you mind beginning?
Thank you.
We'd prefer that he could come up to the table so we could caught
him. I would too.
On the table.
All right, thank you.
As I mentioned, I represent Northern Connections. We're officed out of Herm, Minnesota. We serve a 12-county area of people whose term limit of 60 months on MFIP has expired, and try and provide financial asset information, anything we can help build their foundational life around to reduce the recidivism to MFIP. Part of that, of course, is a diversionary work program. We work closely with SEP up there, the Minnesota Concentrated Employment Program. And our sole focus is simply to keep these people from reverting back to MFIP. It's telephonic counseling, kind of a new level of counseling. There's very little face-to-face. The people receiving the services are comfortable with this. There's a lot of texting and emailing, but because transportation up north and in those sparsely populated counties is an issue, this solves a number of hurdles for them. The main demographic of the people we serve is a single mother, 24 to 28 years old, with two children. And she may very well have an older car or no car at all. So by using telephonic and electronic resources, we overcome that hurdle. There is no fee for the services. They can stay on as we provide supports for as long as they need to, and currently serve about 700 people up there over a 12-county area. Last year, our funding was based, appropriated through deed. Last year, that funding, along with a number of other small nonprofits, the majority party lumped into one fund and had to reapply for workforce grants through deed. And we applied, but were unsuccessful because we're not technically a workforce program, which was ironic because our funding was already with deed. We had a bill authored and co-authored in the Senate this year, but it never even reached the committee level. There was a floor vote on it along party lines, and it was defeated as far as an appropriation for the biennium. So our concern is we feel like, first of all, we're doing very important work. Secondly, the people receiving this information find it very helpful. We have a number of testimonials and such from clients, but we're really struggling for a fiscal foundation. It takes a little over $100,000 a year to operate this. There is a very low overhead on this because there isn't any travel and those types of expenses involved.
But we're here today to monitor what this group is doing and hopefully can align ourselves with some funding source. And we'd certainly be open to questions.
Well, we're thankful that you could come, and we wanted to just hear it. And if everybody could be as brief, then we can get through.
So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Would you like to come?
Good morning, everybody. I work at Emerge Community Development in North Minneapolis. We are a community development agency that we do all kinds of programming in the North Minneapolis community, primarily workforce, youth development, but primarily really getting folks back to work. My place here today, I manage our Financial Opportunity Center, which couples the work of workforce coaching and financial coaching. I do case management in our FAME program, so I help folks access IDA accounts, and I teach financial education, and I supervise the staff of folks that help me do all that work. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to bring the next gen. I'm sorry, I skipped you, Ben. We'll just go across.
Good morning. My name is Dan Duhamel. Again, I'm with the Department of Human Services and the Office of Economic Opportunity, and we're the office that has overseen the FAME program, the Financial Assets for Independence of Minnesota, the IDA program in the state of Minnesota, as well as funding to community action agencies, the statewide poverty fighting network that has been really on the ground working on behalf of low-income Minnesotans to get them out of poverty.
Great. Thank you. Sir. Sorry, and we did not get to meet you. You can introduce yourself.
Yes, thank you very much. This is a pleasant surprise.
My name is Stephen Hudson, and I was a part of the Letters Out of Poverty Task Force originally. About 18 months ago, I was engaged to help provide develop a study on financial services with low-income communities, specifically those folks that are subject to predatory lending and predatory financial services. And from that, through a grant through Northwest Area Foundation, we were able to initiate a feasibility study looking at creating a low-income credit union in the metro area. So for the last 18 months, I've been conducting that study and understanding what the options are, what's currently operating in the state, how it's operating, what types of things can happen to increase that financial literacy, helping folks that have received financial literacy get actual access to financial services after they've completed the training, which is a big issue with the amount of investment that's happening within the area of financial literacy. So so we're very excited about the findings to date. We're anticipating the study to be completed at the end of May, 1st of June. We've gotten some terrific feedback from other segments of community economic development, such as affordable housing and human services. So it's been very promising. So look forward to sharing the results perhaps down the road.
Thank you. Happy to meet you.
Thank you very much.
Would you like to come up?
No, thank you.
Okay. The credit union folks, come on up.
Sure, I'll come up and say hello.
Give us a little brief for our people.
Absolutely. Madam Chair, members, hi, my name is Ryan Smith, and I'm with the Minnesota Credit Union Network. We represent the 133 credit unions across the state of Minnesota. Generally, what we tend to focus on in our world is obviously the asset development, but we have seen a growth in financial literacy and education that way. We actually, as a great example, over the last couple of years, we've had 3 credit unions open branches in high schools. And one of which was actually Postal Credit Union, opened at Tartan High School, which is fully staffed by students. So it's a great way for kids to get educated, not only working in the credit union, but also opening checking accounts, savings accounts, and things like that. And that really has been the area of focus that we've tried to do. We worked very closely for a while, we were working on the development of curriculum in social studies standards to include financial literacy. That seems to have gone through. I don't know if that's been adopted quite yet, but financial literacy is definitely something near and dear to our hearts in all our communities that we serve.
Thank you. And that as you said that, I remembered way back many years ago when I was in high school, we had bookkeeping class. It was that we learned how to write a check. And That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
I'm still writing checks home.
You're one of very few.
I know. Thank you. And anyone else from this? Yes, credit union.
Banks.
The banks.
Hi, Teresa Kubas with the Minnesota Bankers Association. We represent 95% of the banks in Minnesota, and so we have about 400 banks as members of ours. We have large banks. We have U.S. Bank, Wells Fargo, TCF, and all the community banks, kind of, so we have a wide variety. All of our banks, the majority of them, do have some kind of financial literacy program in place. They try and go into the schools. This week, obviously, this month is Financial Literacy Month. And I think just the other day, there was about 10,000 bankers that nationwide went into schools to kind of teach children to save. And I know that a lot of our community banks did that also in Minnesota. And so we kind of try and, I think, with the social studies standards coming into place and what happens with that, will help try and get more education on the financial side into the schools. But then I think, you know, we've also worked with the Department of Commerce quite a bit on kind of some of their tools moving forward and trying to figure out which areas need the most help and what products there are in place that can kind of funnel into those areas. And is it a metro area? Is it a statewide area? And trying to figure out where we really do need to focus. And we obviously know that the younger you learn, the better off you are later down. I actually remember my eighth grade math class also learning how to write checks and kind of balancing out. So, but, you know, we're willing to help in any way that we can.
So appreciative. Thank you. And would you like to come up from the back? In the back row?
I'll just introduce myself. I'm Deanna Smiley-Gulliford with Goodwill Easter Seals, Minnesota. We're a workforce development provider for a great number of Minnesotans who are looking to move into the workforce. And financial literacy is a piece of that. I also am on the board of Minnesota Without Poverty, and I think you should definitely see that organization as a strong ally in your work as we help to carry out the commission's findings from 2009.
Great. Thank you for being here. Thank you. Anyone else back there? Lucy?
Yeah. Hi. I'm Susie Schatz with Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota, and we provide financial counseling statewide and in Wisconsin as well. So a lot of our work focuses on debt management prevention plans, foreclosure prevention. We're doing more with reverse mortgage and all kinds of things along those lines, and with financial literacy, doing a lot of community education and that kind of work. So with older adults and with younger students. Lots more than that.
Yes,
yeah. Yeah. Lots of people.
Yeah. Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you. So I think that does cover, I hope, for the new folks and refreshes our memories of the breadth of work that is being done by so many in so many varied areas. So this is, it's renews my faith. And again, in this task force. So I did want to ask also if you have any questions that you'd like to ask all of our new people, or you have any curiosities. Okay, so far, anytime you feel like asking, please feel free to chime in. So I think we probably will go back then to our agenda. And we did have the purpose of the task force, I think, is pretty clear. So we can go on to the review of our legislative charge, and we know that as well. But I do want to get down to Pam Johnson, the Minnesota Community Action Partnership.
Yes, and so, please. And I was going to cover the review of the asset bills from the last session.
Good.
Before that, would we want to talk about the findings from the Poverty Commission?
Yes, I'm sorry, yes.
I think Tracy was going to...
Sure.
And I can help out.
Okay, yes, thank you. Right. Again, just to also give a brief overview of our organization, I'm Tracy Fishman, Executive Director for Accountability Minnesota.
I'd like to note that these chairs are not great for short people. I would like a big telephone book under my tushy.
Put your purse.
Yeah.
There you go.
So by way of real brief background, Accountability Minnesota provides free tax and financial services to low and moderate income individuals, families, and small business owners directly throughout the Twin Cities metro area. We've been around for over 40 years, and today, by the end of 2013, we're set to serve about 13,000 individuals with tax preparation. We take advantage of what we call the money moment of tax time. We partner with a lot of organizations that are connected to people in this room today, in particular credit unions and community banks, that help us, regardless of one's credit history or banking history. We can open up savings accounts for people on site, especially for those that don't have bank accounts, so they can directly deposit their refunds into a bank account. In 2012, we returned almost $23 million in tax refunds. One of the refundable tax credits, the earned income tax credit, I use as an example because it is considered to be one of the nation's largest anti-poverty social policy tools, lifting almost 6 million people out of poverty every year, half of them children. So we recognize that it is really important that we use those tax refund moments to help people shore up their basic needs, which we know they do with tax refunds, but also begin to think about how they can use those refunds to set aside money to save for a more financially secure future. And then finally, we also provide training and technical assistance to other organizations throughout greater Minnesota, so they in turn are equipped and have the capacity to provide similar services in their communities. And so I welcome the opportunity to be here today, and thank you also for the opportunity to present. I am sort of pinch hitting for Ron Elwood, who was going to be talking about the history of the Poverty Commission. I was not here at the time. I moved here in 2009, and have to say that when I started this work at Accountability Minnesota and working in collaboration with those that were working tirelessly on the efforts to move people out of poverty and towards a more financially secure place. When I looked at this report, I was very much struck by how comprehensive and holistic it was. I think that this commission, in looking at what the needs are and the barriers are directly from communities throughout the state, they came up with some really strong recommendations, recognizing that if you really want to move people towards a more financially secure place, both out of poverty and to stay out of poverty, so that they can really build assets for themselves and their families, you need to look at an array of things, looking at living wages and looking at restoring work as a mode of moving families out of poverty, looking at our public assistance programs, looking at making sure that they are designed in a way that don't have perverse incentives that actually prohibit families from building assets to be able to get public support. Looking at moving Minnesotans to protect their assets so that they are not being preyed upon by predatory lenders. Especially, you know, we like to say that it is expensive to be poor when you don't have access to the financial mainstream, when you're not able to move beyond an ability to build credit or have access to loans for an array of things like fixing your car or if you have unexpected medical expenses. You can really move into a cycle of debt in a lot of different ways. And so I think that this report looked at that as well. Also thinking about what we heard Mr. Johnson say, community with Northern Connections, how we can build community social fabrics and support with peer support and really helping people know that they're not alone and that they have a community behind them. Looking at our system of education and looking at just our own ongoing structures. And so, again, I was struck by that. And there were these six recommendations that came out of that report. I was struck, certainly, when the initial Ladders Out of Poverty Commission said we need to make sure that we're focusing on at least one piece of this and not letting this, you know, book sit on a shelf, but instead, what does it really take for us to focus on the pieces that have to do with asset development and financial literacy? So the Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force was developed initially for 2 years. I came into this work at that time, and I think did a lot to really make sure that there was a shared understanding of what the barriers are, a shared understanding of really what it takes to move people out of poverty. Pam will talk a little bit more about maybe some work that was initially done in those couple of years, but I know that there were efforts to look at public assistance programs. There were efforts to look at what more we need to do to promote financial literacy and capability from kids all the way into those that are of aging populations, because we know seniors can be very vulnerable. And to really look at programs like the IDA, the FAME program, which Pam will talk more about in detail. So I think I will leave it at that. And maybe if you want to say anything else before you move into your agenda item.
And I just wanted to comment too that Representative Maury Lanning and Senator Jungnauer were extremely, these were the areas where they were extremely involved and concerned and helpful with. And so that, you know, is a huge piece of this too, is the work that they did and gave us now to carry. So we have a heavy load that they started and gave us a lot to work with. So thank you.
You know, there was just one other thing that I did just want to say. You can, if you don't have the book in front of you, the information is available online. I encourage folks to, you know, if you haven't looked at it or if you haven't seen it in a while, to look back at it and really see how relevant it is to all of the things that all of us are doing today. And the other thing that I was struck by, both in terms of the qualitative work that happened on the ground in talking to communities, but also looking at some real robust research that we know exists that talks about the need to really prop up families and support them in their efforts, so that looking at things like children's savings accounts, knowing that if kids have savings accounts in their own names, they're 5 to 6 times more likely to go to college, even if that's a small amount. Looking at the importance of incentivizing the ability to save instead of creating barriers to saving. So,
absolutely. Great. So, and I'm Pam Johnson with the Minnesota Community Action Partnership. I'm going to be covering this piece that's in your packet. It's got an outline of some of the bills, and I believe folks in the audience have that as well. And so the Minnesota Community Action Partnership, as many of you know, it's a membership organization of 27 community action agencies that serve all 87 counties of Minnesota about 50 years now. And we look a little bit different in every community that we serve. At the table here, Representative Fritz, your CAP agency is Three Rivers Community Action, and Representative Lean with Lakes and Prairies up in Moorhead, and Senator Pratt, yours is Scott Carver Dakota CAP agency in Shakopee. And so each CAP agency looks a little bit different, but they are all charged with finding solutions to poverty in their community, and they all are led by boards that are tripartite. They have members that are from the private sector, from the public sector, and low-income members. So those folks identify what the needs are in the community and then develop programs to serve the populations. Some of the programs that are best known are programs like Head Start, emergency services. A lot of CAP agencies in the rural areas do disaster relief after floods, after tornadoes, that sort of thing. But really everything from child care to senior services, the CAP agencies seek to deliver if it's not already being delivered. And we've been doing work in the financial education asset building for a number of years, but really increasing that focus in the last dozen or so years, primarily with the passage of the Family Assets for Independence in Minnesota, or the FAME bill, which I'll talk about a little bit later. But we've been also providing free tax assistance in partnership with Accountability Minnesota and AARP for a number of years to help people access those tax credits and then use those funds to either put away or to meet their current needs. And we've been very involved in initially with the Commission to End Poverty back whenever that was, 4 or 5 years ago, when they did the tours around the state, and representatives and senators went and actually met with folks in the community to see what does poverty look like in the rural areas, in the suburban areas, in the metro areas, and get a sense of that. And that's where that report that Tracy was referring to comes from. That commission then evolved into the task force that ended this past year, and we were very involved with that as well, and we're excited to be involved in this. So the first, I'm just going to talk about three pieces of legislation that the task force was involved with the last couple of years, the first being the community engagement bill, and what you have is House File 77, which was authored by Representative Lanning and co-authored by Senator Jungbauer, and that focused on building social capital among low-income communities and highlighted three Minnesota initiatives: the Circles of Support, Northern Connections that was mentioned by Bob Johnson, and the Search Institute's Healthy Community Initiatives. And some of the co-authors, then Representative Hayden, now Senator Hayden, was a co-author, as was Representative Fritz, and you see the other names there as well. And the focus of the bill was to employ successful community engagement strategies, and that's why those three initiatives were selected. And to just briefly highlight what those programs were, you heard a nice synopsis from Bob about Northern Connections being rural-based, kind of a one-stop shop for workforce development. And really that telephonic service delivery is really amazing in the rural areas. Our CAP agencies worked very closely with Northern Connections as well. But getting to folks that can't get in, don't have transportation, that telephonic services, especially with a financial education, is very helpful. The Circles of Support program was a smaller pilot run by a few of the CAP agencies. Representative Lanning was particularly struck by that model because of the way that it built relationships across class and race lines, got people to know each other, and helped people set goals, low-income families, and move out of poverty, really in partnership. That was one of the other models that was looked at in the bill. And the other was the Search Institute's Healthy Community Initiatives. And some of you may know about the 40 assets that the Search Institute is well known for, the 40 assets that youth need to grow up and be successful citizens. And they have another wonderful community engagement strategy that gets local people involved with youth development. So that bill had some hearings, both on the Senate side and the House side, made it to the omnibus bill, did not get funded in the end, in the final omnibus bill, but really got some good coverage. A lot of people learned a lot about those models and about the concept of community engagement and social support. So that was the first bill I was going to talk about. The second bill has to do with asset limits, and I believe the piece in your packet that you have is an executive summary from the report on uniform asset limits. You can access the full report online, or I can get it to you if you'd like. But essentially, the legislation, again, emerged from the Commission on Poverty report. There was concern about both the administrative costs and the barriers to folks that were trying to exit poverty, but the asset limits kept getting in the way. They'd have to get rid of it. As soon as they got enough funds to really essentially get out of poverty, they'd have to lose some of those assets, and it really just kept people in a troubling cycle. So the bill, and that bill is actually on the last page, I believe, of your, it's very short, of your summary, Senate File 470, House File 979, was authored again by Representative Lanning, Senator Jungbauer, with co-authors again. Representative Fritz was a co-author, and Representative Szymanski and Representative Hosh at the time. And DHS was instructed to examine the asset limit requirements across a number of human services programs, and those included group residential housing, Minnesota Supplemental Aid, General Assistance, MFIP, Diversionary Work Program, SNAP, food support at the state level, and child care. And they were charged with establishing consistency and reducing the administrative burden on counties. And that bill passed back in 2011. And so a number of us actually participated in efforts that the Department of Human Services led to get input both internally from DHS staff, from experts, and from others out in the field. What would it take, or what would it look like to find some common ground among all those different limitations? And so you have here, and I think I put it in the summary as well, the recommendations came from the group that, number one, they should halt any new asset limit category creations. There's already so many. Secondly, simplify and align asset policies across programs by reducing the number of asset categories, using common methodology and self-attestation. And third, if the intent is to support greater stability and longer-term self-sufficiency, eliminate asset limits altogether, completely for state economic assistance programs. And several states have done that already and have shown a lot of success. So that executive summary is in your packet. It also shows options for the costs associated with taking action on any of those. And so that summary and that report has been presented to both the House and Senate HHS committees. And as far as I know, it's just left now in the charge of legislators to take action. So the third bill that this task force looked at and worked on last year and the last couple of years was, as Representative Fritz mentioned, the Family Assets for Independence in Minnesota program. And that's Minnesota's largest individual development account program in the state. There are other IDA programs operating throughout the state. This one goes throughout the state, works in connections with a number of partners. It's a public-private partnership working with Bremer Banks, City, County, Federal Credit Union, Emerge Community Development, Leech Lake Tribal Government, and a number of community action agencies in both the metro, rural, and suburban areas as well. And just to give a thumbnail of what the program is, it basically sets up bank accounts for low-income folks so that they can save. They have to complete 12 hours of financial education while they're in the program, usually 1 to 2 years, and then they can buy an asset, either buy a house, set up a small business, or go back to school. And over the time that the program has been offered, initially with legislation authored by then Representative Pawlenty, Senator Berglund, 1,700 assets have been acquired, and over 3,000 participants have completed the financial education. Each participant gets one-to-one coaching. Shauna Thompson from Emerge can give great testimony about what that coaching is all about. It really is the coaching that we see to be the powerful. We call it the fourth dollar. They get a 3-to-1 match, a dollar and a half from state and a dollar and a half from Fed. But really that other dollar comes from the coaching because they're there until the person doesn't need any more help. And sometimes that's beyond the program years. 1,700 assets have been acquired. And you've got a report. You've got both a fact sheet and just the summary of a full report that we worked on with the University of Minnesota's Humphrey Institute and Gustavus Adolphus College to measure what's the return on investment for this program to state and federal funders. And we found that 90% of small businesses that were started with FAME are still in operation after 2 years, and that's double. The federal level is 44%. Over 85% of those who are pursuing college education completed their college degree. And there were no reported foreclosures, and that was during a really high time of foreclosure crisis in our state, as well as strong reduction of public assistance. People who came in following the FAME program with nearly 60% receiving no cash assistance, and when they came in, only 12% had no cash assistance. So a large drop in public assistance at the end of the use of FAME. And again, we believe that's due to the one-to-one coaching and the financial education. So that bill, there was a bill in 2011 to restore funding to the FAME. We temporarily lost funding during the really tricky $6 billion budget crisis in 2011. And there was some great efforts. Representative Bannon, Senator Michelle Benson authored a bill in 2011 to restore funding. Partially for 1 year with support of this task force. And again, Representative Fritz was a co-author. And the task force, this task force met back in July and said, let's keep this going. Let's see if we can get the funding back in the appropriation. There had been an appropriation for $500,000 since 1999. And so that bill was authored by Representative Moran and Senator Claussen this year. It's gotten hearings. It's in both the Senate and the House. Omnibus bills and also in the governor's budget. So we're really excited to see that program move forward. And I think that's all I got. I've been rambling a bit here, so I'll stop for any questions.
It's all good stuff. Any questions? So far? Lots of information. How much is the appropriation this year?
$500,000, so yes.
In all three spots.
Be back in the base again, yep.
Yes. Well, this is very good work that is being done, and lots of it. So I just thought that would be a good start for our new people to hear from you all. So I would like now to turn to Ann for the...
Department of Commerce.
Yes, if you would.
Great. Thank you, Representative Fritz. Many of you in here already know what we have done at the Department of Commerce, but I'd like to share with our new members at the table what we have been working on in the past couple of years. So prior to 2011, the state of Minnesota was one of really the few states that did not have a focused financial literacy program in their Department of Treasury or financial services, as many other states across our nation do. So when Commissioner Rothman began his tenure at the Department of Commerce, he saw it as, you know, the mission-driven purpose of the Commerce Department to include a financial literacy aspect into his work. So in 2011, he kicked that off with convening the first roundtable event in the state of Minnesota. And at that point in time, 60 advocates came, many of whom, probably all actually, are in this room right now, to really lay out the foundation and put together a roadmap for where we were in the state of Minnesota, what the programs were, you know, what we needed. And out of that roundtable, a set of recommendations and clear action steps for both the Department of Commerce and really the state emerged. After that, really the Department of Commerce took the recommendations, and I'm not going to go through them for everybody in this room, but we've achieved a majority of those action steps. Most importantly, what has impacted our work at the department most has been focusing on consumer protection by coupling tips, consumer tips, and how they can protect themselves against fraud, abuse, scams, and other types of crimes that really impact people's assets and their financial well-beings. And every time we take an enforcement action against a company or a person, we put those tips, couple them, to ensure that people are aware of how they can have the resources available to protect themselves going forward. And the second thing that we really did that has moved us, moved the financial literacy conversation forward, was to create an interagency task force on financial literacy. So to bring together all of our state agencies that do have a part in financial literacy, and that's commerce, education, higher ed, corrections, revenue, deed, housing finance agency, human rights, military affairs, and human services, to bring them all together to talk about where we are and how we can leverage our resources better together. So after that, and that was at the commissioner level, commissioners came together to talk about how we can really tackle this issue in the state of Minnesota. So 2012, we created the interagency work group with the commissioners and staff and put together a calendar of events that stretched across the state. You can tell it's the end of financial literacy month right now. To address and to really focus on the holistic nature of financial literacy, that it's not just one particular population that needs financial literacy, it's everybody. And, you know, I think the economic crisis really showed that this impacts all of us, and what it does to our communities and our state economy is really, you know, is something that we should keep in the fore of when we talk about financial literacy and asset building. So we divided up the month into four different weeks, youth, to talk about the importance of teaching our youth in Minnesota about financial literacy, higher ed, to really tackle the issues facing our college students when it comes to debt management after they graduate, as well as the importance of saving and planning ahead. And then third week was families, all of the issues ranging from home buyership, having the proper insurance coverage, what kind of banks and accounts people should be looking to open, military returning back from their service, and what, you know, the impact that having that money and transitioning, what that does to folks, and then also with revenue and the importance of looking at your tax returns, and is this an opportunity to save and create an asset base. And then the fourth week, which is really near and dear to Commissioner Rothman's heart, is the senior week. And as we grow, as we move forward, the importance of looking at seniors and how financial literacy impacts our senior population. We just had an event earlier this week with Skip Humphrey, and one of his statistics, it just really blew us away. It was so much higher than what we had previously known, but he said that $17 trillion currently are held by or are under management by our seniors right now, $17 trillion worth of assets. That's crazy. You know, crooks know it, and so they, you know, it's just creating this huge population that is vulnerable to scams and abuse, and it's something that we really need to tackle in the state of Minnesota, especially as we move forward and our population ages, as we all know in this room. So anyways, that was 2012. In our packets, I put together the 2012 roundtable report, which also includes action steps from last year that we have looked at And then this year, we again, the interagency work group put together another calendar, which is in your packets. And that also had roughly 40 events statewide focusing on the weeks. And what we did this year that was different is really focus on those teachable moments, which was one of the action steps. Take those times in people's lives where they need financial literacy and discuss them in those real-life moments. It's been a long month. We've done a lot of work across the state. And again, the reason for the collaboration and putting it on paper is to really raise the awareness. When we work together, we're so much powerful than when we work by ourselves. And so we're committed to moving forward and taking these action steps and happy to be a resource to everyone on the committee and in the audience. So anything else I can add?
We have been busy.
Thank you. Oh, we held the key event. We held the third annual roundtable this past Wednesday at Neighborhood House on the west side of St. Paul. And really, what we're looking at this year and the challenge brought forth by the commissioner, which is probably the most important thing I should be saying this morning, and I forgot, is, you know, instead of focusing on the collaboration, which is important, is really looking at the challenge and how we can each challenge ourselves to do more in the next year. One of those main components is challenging our local units of government to look at and explore how they can pull together their folks involved in financial literacy, ranging from financial institutions to schools to private business to philanthropy, to look at how they can have their local financial literacy councils and make sure that it's a discussion that's happening in their local communities. Change happens there, and so does conversations about money, which is often an uncomfortable place for people. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Anne. Thank all of you. You know, I'm sitting here because I'm thinking about, you know, and I have such an urgency with this. I don't know why it is, but, you know, 2 years is all we have, so I'm thinking about what I'd like to do myself, you know, in my small area, is bring a group down and have a meeting, an open meeting in my community, and you all can think about your communities. You know, the scam piece with the elderly is huge, and my son's mother-in-law just sent $4,200 to, she thought, Jacob, who was my grandson, who wasn't Jacob on the phone. And, you know, we're out that money. And I just, when I heard that, I thought she was smarter than that. But, you know, they know how to get you. And the $17 trillion, that's a lot of money. So somebody's after all. And I am concerned about the elderly in throughout, you know, the nation and the state. But, this just happened in my own family. So that's how, you know, you think these things don't happen that close to home, but obviously they do. So I would like to have some type of an informational meeting along that line, and then, you know, and open it up. And as I was thinking about it, I'm thinking, well, this is such a wide area of concern, because I also have families who are struggling, who are on assistance, who want to get off assistance, can't save money, and the transportation, fixing the car or not having a car, walking to work or riding a bike, getting a bike to get to work. The transportation thing is huge out in greater Minnesota. So there's a lot of areas here that I'm concerned about. And I'm concerned about northern Minnesota with you over there. You know, it almost looks like you're falling through the cracks, and we can't let that happen either. So we should have been working harder along with you this year. So we have, you know, work to do in front of us, and we have to go behind us and find the problems and try and put this all together and continue on the right path. And there's a lot to do. So that's my concern here. So I'm going to, I know the next date we need to find is a date to meet again, but also beyond that, we need to think about our own work that we can do outside of a room like this. And that's where I think the work needs to be done. And again, it is a very delicate issue to talk to people about their finances, rich or poor. It's, and I was brought up, you don't do those things. But, you know, then you see the suffering and the the incredible lack of knowledge. And, you know, that people would, and I think still people are afraid of their bankers.
I think they're just afraid to talk to their bankers. It's just like, you know, they're just like up on a pedestal. And it's, you know, we need to get that ladder and get up on that ladder and be able to have some sort of comfort and teach people. And like you're saying, when you go out with the commissioner and Tracy and Pam and Bob, to teach people how that, you know what, we can talk to our bankers. And our bankers will help us. They want to help us, obviously. So that's sort of where I'm at. And Ben, you want to say anything about how you're feeling?
Well, I guess my name is Representative Ben Lean. I'm from Moorhead, first term. I guess my real interest in this area comes from my background. I work with a nonprofit credit counseling agency in the Fargo-Moorhead area, so I am very interested, very concerned about financial literacy, specifically folks that just get in that revolving door of poverty with credit unions and the high-interest lending, and really empowering people to take action for themselves to be able to lift themselves out of that. Also, something else that really kind of opened my eyes and made me think about things in terms of a little bit more of a realistic setting was an event I attended during last fall at the Fargo Dome. It was various groups that represent different agencies, different services for impoverished folks to, you know, come in just to get a haircut, get family portraits taken, those types of things, but then also just to have access one place one day where they can just have access to these resources and learn about really what's out there in the community for them. So, you know, this is something that I definitely do take personally, have a very personal interest in, and something that I'm really looking forward to working on.
Bless you. Senator, did you want to make any comments, or just feel free?
This is, you know, in all honesty, this is all new to me, and so I'm trying to take it in. I'm so impressed with some of the results that I've heard of the programs that we've already started. When I can hear that we've got double the rate of national success in some of our programs. That tells me we're on the right path, and we've got a great model to work with. Thrilled to see the work being done in financial literacy and really targeting the message to at-need groups. And I guess I'm a little maybe skewed to the youth, and I'm glad to see that we did include youth as part of this and prevent people from hitting the need later in life. Prevention is always better than redemption. So I'm looking forward to moving ahead.
Great. Yeah, great to have you here. And I also, thinking about it, we can go a little longer. We were good for the hour, and we have to go in at 10, so I don't know what your time frame is, but we can go 10, 15 minutes, I think. So, the other folks, sorry that they couldn't join us, but they also have expressed a concern, you know, in a lot of the areas that we've all heard about and mentioned here today. Yes, and did you? Yes, you came in late. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm both old and
and young.
Yeah. So it said 9:30.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It didn't. Oh, it's just my eyes. I wanted to say a few things. I'm Marcia Cressy. I'm with the Minnesotan Standing Together to End Poverty. We're an organization of low-wealth Minnesotans. We participated greatly in the Legislative Commission's work. And since then, there's been, for us, a problem with transparency. We don't know, like, what's going on, and we try. It's not like we're not actively trying to find out. And one of the things that I wanted for people here to see, and because it's assets and it's, but is we had wilder because we're halfway through. If we're going to end poverty by 2020, from when we started, we're halfway. And so Wilder pulled together for us the benchmarks that we set in 08 and where we are now, and every single one of those benchmarks were worse than we were. There's more homeless children. There's more full-time people that are working that are in poverty. There's more, more. And so I wanted people to look at those in relationship to, you know, how we can not, like, you know, be hopeless, but take these and make sure that we're working in reality to make things better for all Minnesotans. And just the trend. So those are the two things that are of concern, and I'm sorry.
Well, I'm glad that you came, because that is almost the way we ended last year on that same note. When we all then, you know, we were, of course, you know, patting each other on the back and the wonderful work that has been done, because we need to know that, and we, you know, that's the honesty of this. But we also know that the need has increased. We had a recession. Huge recession that took people down, more people down, and then so the, you know, the ladder just, I mean, we're only on the third rung, and so we understand that, and that's why we were adamant about and knew that we had to keep this task force going two more years, and they were going to end this task force. So welcome to join us.
Thank
in the
you.
Yeah,
and one more thing was I'm a Minnesota without poverty. You know, they have also said, you know, what's going on there? Do we still want to, you know, what can we do? How can we engage? And is this where we want to engage? Is this a task force that can move things forward with the state? So I'm on their statewide organizing committee, which is not, you know, their board or anything. I know that at the meeting they were asking that, and I don't see anyone from them here, so...
Well, all are welcome.
Oh, sorry.
Yes. So we appreciate that, and again, it gives us our the weight of this.
And if anybody wants copies of what Wilder did, I have.
We'd like to. And speaking of copies, I would like to ask if you could get a copy, a hard copy, of the study. For our new folks to have, and I've got mine.
Which study?
The report.
Oh, okay.
Is that
Greg? Have you got more copies of those,
or you know,
just get you copies?
Yeah,
get
to our
copies.
Offices.
Yep,
that would be good to have. Yep. It's excellent material. A lot of people do a lot of work.
It's all one page.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, that would be a great. If we could just get that for you know, all of us, and I'll take another one. You want
to take this one?
No, but when you get them. You know.
Yep.
All right.
Greg,
can you do that for us? Or how do you
I'm sorry.
She also just wants the copy
for all
of
the members.
Yes, we'll do
yep.
that. And we'll post all the documents that have been presented today on the website.
Okay,
as
you
well.
Can give that to the offices of
yep.
the new folks.
Sure.
That would be very helpful. For, and you know, it's a good, it's like a Bible. Just go back and read it often. Really, it is. It's amazing. They did tour down in Rice County. They did come to Ruth's House of Hope, which is a transitional housing for women and children in Faribault, Minnesota, that we have. So they were there for, it's been, you know, hours in small groups all over. And it's a beautiful old building if you ever get a chance. Maybe we can do a tour sometime down there. And there were many, like, groups of people, 4 and 3 and 2, and, you know, about different issues in their lives. And it actually gave people, I think, some privacy and an opportunity to talk with people. So, and I don't see this task force doing that extent of travel, because we don't have the money. But I think we certainly understand the issues. So, you know, all of us who have come together now and traveled throughout, and we do know that it is still prevalent. And you know, we're not out of poverty, but we're still trying. Okay, so that's basically where I'm going to leave it, my comments today. And I do think if anyone else has anything else that they want to add.
Tracy Fishman had done a brief report, unprepared one for you on CFED. It might be helpful to have that piece.
Yeah, no, I it's not a report as much as we thought that in this first meeting for the launch of this task force's next round of work together and with the community, that another just context for helping to think about this work is the household security, financial security framework that a national organization called CFED put together. And you have that in your packets. And again, this is something that many of us in the community look to when we think about how we frame our work. So CFED is a national organization that I think has a lot of really good data as well as good information that many of us look to as resources, both for, again, for data to inform our work, as well as for really looking at some best practices in this work around how to help families build financial security. So not so long ago, several years ago, they put together, again, this framework to help us think about how to achieve household financial security. And you see that this is a really holistic way to look at the multiplicity of things that we need to think through. People need to have access to good information so that they can build their knowledge base and be educated. But, of course, we recognize that that is just a step in a full process of helping people. And they need to have good earnings. And when we think about earnings, it's both wages as well as public support systems and tax credits that help to boost income or reduce expenses, however you look at it. And then have a mechanism to be able to save some of that money. And as Marcia had pointed out, that a lot of families are, you know, if they're not in poverty, they may be just a paycheck away from poverty. And so another thing that CFED has looked at, and they have really good tools that I encourage you to look at, is thinking about a term called asset poverty. And asset poverty doesn't just look at the poverty rate, but they look at what it takes for a family to be able to get by for at least 3 months in the case of a loss of income or an unexpected emergency. And according to their data nationally, almost half of families are asset poor. And in Minnesota, we are a little bit better, but statewide, we're at least at 20% of families that are just a few months away from being in poverty. And so that is something that is also, I think, a really important tool when we think about what we need to do to support families in the case that they experience an emergency or a loss in pay. And so this idea of helping families to save, which includes a lot of the work that folks are doing around financial coaching and counseling to address issues around debt, money management, credit building. You know, I should just say that we have done some research on our own customers based on data that we have, and we know that a huge number of our customers have either no credit score or they have credit scores that are subprime credit scores that really prohibit them from being able to access safe financial products that help them get ahead. So that idea of being able to save, and then an ability to invest. So the IDA program, retirement accounts, investing in a home, those kinds of things. And then finally, protection, making sure that we have mechanisms in place to protect consumers from being able to, you know, to be able to protect those assets and not be subject to prey with some of the examples that we've heard about today. And so I encourage you to really, you know, keep this also next to your report that the Poverty Commission did, as I think this is a very useful framework and lens that we can think through and think about as we are talking about this work to build financial security and assets for families. And I think I'll just leave it at that because I know we don't have a whole lot of time.
And this is very important. And I in the presentations over the last couple of years, I remember hearing, some of the from some of the banks that had folks saving so much money and then getting a prize for saving that amount. So I think we need to continue to talk about that. It's like the carrot. It actually gets them. It's incentive. You know, some incentive for people because it's so hard to save with so limited funds. And that's such a good trait to develop. But I think, I remember my parents used to do things when they'd get they go to one bank to another to get a free gift, you know. So moving money around, that was, and I never got into that. I think they quit doing that. But there are the incentive that I've heard, you know, it's money. And it's help, real help. So it's real incentives. So I think we need to continue that, to keep that in mind as well. So excellent material. I don't want us to overwhelm, and you know, and yet I think you've all made a big contribution here today with, you know, bringing forth everything that everybody's doing. Thank you for doing what you're doing. Keep doing it. And we will hopefully continue our efforts here with the legislation and get through this session. And then we're going to have to start thinking about, talking about, you know, what we can do in the near future, in the next session, in regards to, you know, saving and helping and finding funding, and to message what we do to the other legislators. They should know what's going on. This is a tool for them. These are not a tool. This is a whole toolbox, full of tools. So somehow we'll have to figure that out, too, to get this information, to share it with our fellow legislators. So thank you for coming, and I appreciate it. Did you want to say something, too? You're up here.
Thanks. I'm Trish Olson with the University of Minnesota, and I'm a partner with many people in the room and the kinds of work that we do at the University of Minnesota. And I often think of our work at the university as, if you ever remember those advertisements on Sunday morning on public TV, it's, we don't make the surfboard, we make it faster or something. Sometimes we work in the background of doing a lot of training for agencies. In fact, we partnered with Northern Connections in conducting training with your participants, but training your staff. And so we do a lot of staff training at the University of Minnesota. I think we look at our role in two areas, both education, but guess what? We're a land-grant research institution. And so we try to understand the problem a little deeper in order that those who are practitioners can do it better. So types of research we're doing right now is in the area of disaster response. How are people reacting when there's a flood? How can we do our work better? How are those who are most vulnerable impacted by the recession, such as American Indian and Latino audiences? And we're working in the background with workforce centers, developing online learning tools that they can access there. So I think, you know, much investment goes to the University of Minnesota from our legislature, and it's being used in varying ways to support the work that's out there in the state. So I love the tool that Tracy showed us, because I think this is a way to look at development of legislation, assessment of legislation, because it's not in any one arena. And so as we think about protection, how will healthcare, insurance reform, that's a huge piece of this puzzle and can be embraced by this task force. Just as disaster insurance, flood insurance, you know, how does that impact? So there's many aspects to personal finance, personal capability, asset development, that comes from many different arenas, many different units that we can really embrace, we can learn about, we can research, and help Minnesotans do better. Thanks for asking.
And thank you for your work. That is exceptional. And I went through a flood in my area, and of course Moorhead, these guys, and they're probably going to have another one, and Duluth, it's just... That in itself, the work that needs to be done. Because when I had my flood, people, my own administrator and workers, fire department, police officers, in the beginning days of that, were like, what do we do? I mean, it was amazing how... And then folks like you come to help us, direct us, and that helps.
And I think that's both proactive and reactive, and proactive from what they can do at the Department of Commerce and other entities, but... You know, we come in later to say, well, now how do you make your lives better? And looking at SBA, FEMA, all the types of agencies working together. There are opportunities like that that are both reactive, and I think we're also as much interested in being proactive and helping people avoid those situations to begin with.
And let me just conclude with that, even though the flood is over and FEMA's been there and everybody did what they were supposed to do, it isn't finished, because I still have my poverty. I still have my people down by the north end by the river that didn't get any help. You know, they couldn't, you know, we're low-income people that wouldn't take on another $20,000 loan at 75 years of age if they, you know, so they're stuck. And so those are the things that we need to we need to help them. We can't forget about those people. So, yes,
Representative Fritz, when you bring up the flooding, in 2 weeks in Moorhead and Fargo, they put together 2 million sandbags. If you can do that, you can get things done. And it's like, it doesn't have to all be about you know, acting to the reacting to the tragedy. It can be what we can do, and so
and we can. We're hardworking Minnesotans, so I'm convinced that, you know, we've come a long way. There are days when I think, holy cow, we're just never going to do this. But look at us. We're here. Look at what we're doing. And this is good work. So we just have to keep doing more of it. And anybody have any other comments, closing comments? Okay. Well, we're very happy that you could come. I'm very happy. And I'll convey this to the other senators and representatives, and the next meeting then that we have with them, we hope to have a chair. I'd like to be, the co-chair. And so I'll just put that out there. So I can just pick up the pieces whenever. I'm happy to do that. Half of my life is just because I've shown up and can do some work. And I'm glad. It's good work. I'm happy to do the work. So I think we'll conclude this meeting then. And, you'll all be getting emails about when we hope to meet again. We'll have to come together with the other folks and see when we can do that. But I would like to continue throughout the interim and meet here. We have this available to us, and then we can keep you abreast of where we're going to be, and hopefully I can look out in my hometown and see some of you there. And throughout the state as well, I can, usually when I'm out of here, I'm traveling or doing, I'm never home. I'm busy. So happy to be of service. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
And we are adjourned. Yes.